Thanks for joining us. I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm. She's on vacation. In 2007, only 15% of high school students who took the SATs wrote the essay portion in cursive. A growing number of schools are dropping cursive drills in favor of teaching keyboarding. Joining me in the studio to talk about the future of handwriting in the digital age, Anne Trubeck of Oberlin College and Tracy Bailey of the Association of American Educators. And joining us from the Yale Broadcast and Media Center in New Haven, Connecticut, Kitty Burns-Flory, author of Script and Scribble, The Rise and Fall of Handwriting. Welcome to the Diane Rehm Show.
It's great to be here.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
We invite our listeners to join our conversation, add their own comments on handwriting. Later in this hour, our toll-free number, 1-800-433-8850. You can always send us an email at drshow@wamu.org. And you can find us on Facebook and Twitter, where we've already gotten a fair number of comments. So, Kitty Flory, let's start with you. Your book is called The Rise and Fall of Handwriting. Have we seen the fall of handwriting?
Well, I don't think it is completely prostrate, but it's definitely on its way down. Even since Script and Scribble was published a little more than 2 years ago, I think that two things have happened. One is that handwriting has declined even more than my book talked about. But the other thing is that as it has declined, its defenders have increased. So there's a vocal and really quite activist group out there who wants to preserve handwriting, and they're just growing.
You know, I'll say we've gotten some really impassioned tweets on the issue of handwriting. We'll be going to those in just a few minutes later in this hour. Well, Tracy Bailey, you're a former teacher. Mm-hmm. In fact, the former National Teacher of the Year in 1993. Congratulations on that.
Thank you very much.
Teaching high school in Florida. So why are so many schools dropping the requirement to teach cursive?
Well, I think we see a few factors. One is there's a tremendous pressure on schools to produce academic results in reading, writing, math, social studies, science. And this is a fundamental requirement for No Child Left Behind and so many state adequate yearly progress requirements. Teachers are being pressed. Now, again, teachers will teach what they're required to, what they're asked to. But we see society changing. We see school boards taking a little bit of the pressure off. We see state boards of education saying, fit it in as you can. Now, what is absolutely essential, though, is legible handwriting. It's the cursive itself has become a little bit less emphasized, and that's just something that we see changing over the last 10 and 20 years.
So what do we mean by cursive handwriting?
Well, all students in America are taught first print writing. And that usually begins even in kindergarten and then in first and second. In Britain, they call this joined up writing. You know, it's the traditional cursive, the Palmer method that some may remember from way back. And that's really where we see less and less students choosing to write in script, less and less adults choosing to write in cursive when they're given that choice. The SAT, you know, 15% of the students chose to write in cursive on the SAT. The vast majority don't.
And you must see this all the time in your classes at Oberlin.
Well, I never see my students' handwriting, printing, or cursive because everything is done on keyboards.
And do you think that's a good thing?
I think it's absolutely phenomenal. I mean, the reason why we teach writing, handwriting, or cursive initially in those early grades is to allow students to express their ideas, to communicate them. And typing and keyboarding allows that to happen in a better way than handwriting and cursive. And so it's enabling students to write more and to write better.
And so, Kitty, what do you think? Is there a reason to encourage kids to do cursive?
You know, cursive, I think, has had its day and it's over. I think what's really important is that students learn not necessarily cursive, but some sort of reliable, fast, legible handwriting that they can use all their lives and that's not going to fade away. I think as cursive does, when they get to be in fourth or fifth grade, they're not required to use it very often, so it just sort of disappears. And I think a lot of adults can say that they're their old cursive that they learned is pretty debased by now. But cursive isn't that important. I think what's important is any kind of handwriting that is going to be something you can use when you need it. And there are other scripts besides cursive. And if a child or a young adult or an adult is printing and the printing is legible and fast, then I don't see anything wrong with printing.
But don't we lose something if kids just do not learn cursive writing at all? They print everything in block letters, or that's just not a skill they acquire. Is anything lost if that's what happens?
Yeah. Yeah, I do think there is a loss, but there is always a loss with change, and there's enormous gain as well. People do make judgments based on others' handwriting. If you have poor handwriting, it has been proven that people might consider you less intelligent. On the other hand, there's no correlation between good handwriting and intelligence. So keyboarding is actually more egalitarian and democratizing than cursive. So we'll lose some of that, although it can still be taught, but not necessarily as the main basic skill for writing and communicating.
Well, is it just then, Anne, a matter of nostalgia that, you know, I took the Palmer method and so I want my kids to do the same?
I think there's a lot of that. And we've seen historically that whenever a new writing technology is introduced, we become very attached and nostalgic about the previously supplanted one. This has happened with the printing press, with even the invention of writing in the first place. So this is a pattern that happens over history, and it is nostalgia, yeah.
Well, Tracy, what do teachers think about this? Do teachers in the third and fourth grades where you tend to teach cursive writing, are they glad to be done with this, or do they think there's something missing?
There's two schools of thought, and I've talked to scores of teachers in the last week. A lot of these reports are being driven from state decisions, like Indiana's recently, to not require cursive writing as a state standard. It's interesting, though, that even when states make those decisions to not mandate it, the vast majority, if not all, school districts still teach cursive as a component of the curriculum. It's just not focused. It's not in the emphasis. They do that so that students are able to read cursive. They do that so that students are able to do things like sign their names or read some historical documents. But it's not the hour a day or the 45 minutes a day that you might think of from 50 years ago. Teachers are supportive of teaching cursive. It's just not the focus of the curriculum. It's not something that they can spend more than 10 minutes a day on.
Here's a comment from Facebook. Katie has written this. I think cursive should be taught because I'd imagine it accesses a different part of the brain and our creativity. I've heard literary agents say that they can tell when a novel has been handwritten or written on a word processor. You're shaking your head, Anne.
Yeah. No, I mean, I do think that cursive does. It's a fine motor skill, and there are certain things that it allows us neurologically and cognitively that, yeah, we may lose, and that is, like I said before, a loss. But writing style, voice, tone, these are the things that are really important. And whether you're writing in cursive or word processing, that's not going to have
Kitty,
any difference.
Kitty, do you agree with that?
I do. You know, I'm a writer. I've written a lot of books, and I write fiction as well as nonfiction. And I must say that, of course, over the years, I have gone from writing them in a notebook and then typing them up on my old manual typewriter to now composing them on my computer. And I have to say, I think I write better on the computer than I did before. And that doesn't mean that I don't take a lot of notes in handwriting and I don't sit down and think someplace besides in front of my computer, you know, and make notes on what I'm thinking about in terms of creating a character or doing a bit of dialogue or something. I do that. But when I change over to the keyboard, I'm able to manipulate what I've written so much more easily than the old days of literal cut and paste that I can never say that the keyboard is not good for good writing. I think that's absolutely not true. On the other hand, something about sitting down with a pen and a piece of paper does focus your attention in a way that I'm not sure that the computer does. And I think that if children are losing that, then that's not a good thing. It seems to be part of learning to write, and I don't mean just to write letters, but to write, you know, as a writer. It helps you think, it helps you focus to sit down with a pen and a piece of paper.
Tracy.
Well, I think what Kitty just mentioned is the process that the vast majority of teachers teach. And again, we want all students to have good legible writing. There are some teachers that still feel very strongly about the teaching of cursive, but all teachers will say, take your notes, outline your research paper, outline what you're going to be writing about. Some will say do that on the computer. Some will say do that in handwriting if you want. But we see assignments being turned in, even in elementary school, certainly in middle schools and high schools, electronically. We see teachers that are saying it's so much easier to mark up a paper and tell a student, go back and change these few sentences, than, here, rewrite this 20-page thing. And I remember, as a student, I think we all do, being told, rewrite this whole thing. And so there is a lot more of that manipulation that can be done. I think that's one of the advantages of including technology where it makes things better and easier. You know, if we're doing research papers or reports for a business, you certainly wouldn't want to have to go back and rewrite something. Students need to live in that world if they're going to succeed in the 21st century.
And I think that idea that there's a certain way of thinking when you have the pen and the paper is associational and cultural and historical, not sort of inbred or natural. Most of us learn to write that way. So we have that association from when we were children, and these were the first ways we wrote, and it was quiet and calm. But in America, it's really only it's less than 200 years that people have been writing this way. And in the, you know, if you think there's been a lot of great writing over, you know, beyond the last 200 years. So, you know, it's because we were taught this way that we have these associations. And the kindergartners and first graders today may have the same sense of sort of the focus and concentration when they have their keyboard and their screen up.
Oh, how interesting. That's Anne Trubeck. She's Associate Professor of Rhetoric and Composition at Oberlin College in Oberlin, Ohio. She's also the author of A Skeptic's Guide to Writers' Houses. And Tracy Bailey is also with us here in the studio. He's Director of Education Policy for the Association of American Educators. And joining us from Yale is Kitty Burns-Flory. She's the author of Script and Scribble, The Rise and Fall of handwriting. Well, I'll say one word in defense of cursive, which is if you're writing the most personal note, a love letter, a sympathy note, boy, you certainly write those by hand and not on a computer. Well, we'll take a short break, and when we come back, we'll go to the phones, 1-800-433-8850. Stay with us. I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm this hour. Now joining us by phone is Karen Epstein. She teaches the fourth grade at Rockwell Elementary School in Montgomery County, Maryland. Karen, thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thank you.
So do you spend any of your school day teaching your kids cursive?
In fourth grade, we are reinforcing the skills of cursive. The initial teaching of cursive takes place in third grade, which I spent teaching for 10 years, and I would spend... It wasn't a major part of our day. It was a small component.
Do you think it's important to school kids in cursive?
I think it is very important for them to learn cursive. It's not a major focus, but they do need to be able to read it and to write it in order to communicate with everybody in the world. Not everybody uses it. Yes, computers and media are a great part of our education now, but they still need to be able to read and write it.
You know, I wonder if you feel like, I think Tracy was saying, many teachers feel that there's such a focus now on the things that you test for, that the things that you don't test for, like cursive handwriting, just get squeezed out of the school day.
They get squeezed, but they don't get eliminated. I know when I taught cursive, we'd limit it to 15, 20 minutes, 2 to 3 times a week. So it wasn't eliminated, but it was definitely condensed. But there is a way to still do it and have it be meaningful and productive without it overtaking everything else.
Yeah. How about keyboarding? Do you spend some time teaching your kids keyboarding?
Yes, I do, because students need to be able to use a computer appropriately. And if they're going to be using it, they need to make the time that they're on it meaningful. And a lot of the kids come in with a lot of great skills, but they don't know how to type.
Yeah. And what do kids think about this? Do they, when you were teaching the third grade and now in the fourth grade, do they look forward to cursive drills or to keyboarding drills, or do they think it's kind of a chore?
Kids are very excited to learn cursive in third grade. That, to them, is like a sign that they're getting older. The keyboarding skills are very excited at first. It kind of dwindles as they're getting used to it, because just like anything, when it's rote memory, it takes a while. But it's an essential skill, and that was one of the best skills I ever learned in high school, was learning to keyboard. It has made my life so much easier.
Yeah,
and I couldn't imagine being a hunter and pecker.
I agree with that. Certainly use it every day. Do you think that there is auxiliary things that happen when kids learn cursive? I mean, in terms of creativity or individual expression, are there any spillover effects that you've seen?
Some kids really enjoy it and use the cursive for everything they do, and they enjoy it. And those tend to be your more creative students or artistic students, and I think it's a good outlet for them. But I don't see it as a downfall for some students. You know, it's not a weakness.
And do you worry about schools that have dropped the requirement entirely of teaching cursive?
I do, because if you think about it, when they grow up, how are they going to, as they go through school, how are they going to read things that are written in cursive? Things are still written in cursive. They have to sign forms. How are they going to sign their name? How can they prevent fraud on their for themselves? We're not at the age where we have another way to say that this is not my signature, or this is. If they're printing everything, how can they prevent that?
All right, Karen Epstein, thank you so much for joining us this hour.
Thank you.
Karen is a fourth grade teacher at Rockwell Elementary School in Montgomery County, Maryland. Well, this, what about her point about signatures? Here's an email from Susan, who writes on Facebook, "Call me old-fashioned, but don't we all need a signature? To me, a signature is cursive. You have to own your own John Hancock." And you're shaking your head. What do you think?
Well, there are electronic means to provide your signature now that are very common. I don't even think you need your signature on your tax return anymore. So I do think that is, you know, something that is being phased away through, you know, other means. I mean, I'm not saying no one should learn how to write their signature. I just don't think it's an essential, you know, necessary thing. We have electronic signatures that are now legal.
Does it make it easier, though, there are many times you sign your signature on a credit card receipt or on a legal document when you buy a house. Does it make your signature easier to forge if you don't have a kind of drilling in cursive? Kitty, what do you think?
I'm sure it does. I don't know much about electronic signatures, but I have to say that even though I distrust the whole nostalgia argument, something, you know, you just get this awful sinking feeling when you think that people are not going to have a signature anymore, that, you know, that they are not going to be writing their names, they're not going to need to write their names. I know it may be irrational in the digital age, but it's sort of horrifying to think that. And one of the outgrowths of this that I think about a lot, just because I am a writer and I like to read the letters of writers, is that we won't have letters to each other anymore. Mm. And, you know, the great letter writers of history, you know, I have a bookshelf that has nothing but writers' letters in it, and the letters of E.B. White and Elizabeth Bishop and James Thurber and Van Gogh. Van Gogh's letters are incomparable, and we'll never have anything like that again. And you know, those two things, no signature and no letters, no collections of letters from writers who are writing now to each other, talking about their work, just being funny, giving insights into their private lives, that's going to be over. And I distrust nostalgia, but this is getting to me.
You know, everyone, not just writers, is writing more, much more now than they were even 20 years ago. I bet, you know, your students even are texting and emailing and Facebook. These are all forms of writing. And those great writers of the past, the contemporary ones, they're writing to each other. They're writing emails. They're writing.
Nobody's saving them, though.
Sure, they're all archived. So, you know, in fact, I think we're in a just wonderful golden age of writing. There's so much more writing happening now. It used to be that the phone, you know, you would do a lot of talking on the phone, and now emailing and texting and Twitter, that's replacing that. So I actually think you can turn it around and say we're doing so much more communicating with each other through writing than we used to.
Tracy.
Well, to go back to Karen's statements, that excellent teacher viewpoint, you know, I want to emphasize that the teaching and the learning of cursive has not been eliminated from the curriculum, really, in almost any school district. You know, the state of Missouri, 15, 16 years ago, removed their state mandate, and yet you're hard-pressed to find a single school district in Missouri that does not teach cursive. What you find is that we are teaching cursive across the country in order to give students those abilities that Karen mentioned, that we've all mentioned, the ability to read cursive from archival or historical documents. It's easier to read cursive than it is to write it well sometimes. To be able to let students experience that joy, that's something that we continue to hear from our teachers, is that students are excited when they have that opportunity to learn cursive. And, of course, in doing that, they're able to sign their name. Then what happens, though, sometime in that fourth, fifth, sixth grade and higher, is that you allow the students to make a decision of what style of writing they're more comfortable with for doing their handwritten work. And, of course, we do see an emphasis in more and more work being done on the computers, but not at the exclusion of handwritten work.
You know, at the risk of being the you know, the old fogey on this panel, I wonder also about, it's certainly true that the people are doing a lot of writing and that that they send each other digitally, and that is very retrievable. But the producer, Susan Nabors, who prepared this show yesterday, brought in a journal that her grandmother had kept that was written in really quite perfect cursive handwriting. And what a connection you felt to her grandmother, who's now passed away, because you saw that she had put pen to paper. And I wonder if she had typed something that you had been saved digitally, if it would have, you know, kind of felt like such a connection to someone who was gone.
I think that's the same way with letters versus email. You know, yes, they're still going to exist if anybody's going to go in and find them in the archives, but it's just different. But, and that's all I can say.
But the handwriting, I actually saw Susan's grandmother's notebook as well, is very, you said, perfect. It's regular. It's formulaic. She was taught cursive to look like a typewriter or a font. And so it is not individual or personal. You do have that sense of the hand touching the paper, absolutely. But you don't get a sense of her personality like you would if she had written it, you know, if what we had of her was an email she sent to her granddaughter, where you get that sense of her mind, her...
Well, I actually don't think that that's true. I mean, all of us who learned cursive in school, which, you know, when I was a kid, we really learned cursive, but we all learned it together. We were all trying to copy those same perfect letters, but everybody's handwriting was different. And, you know, if you talk to a graphologist, and I interviewed a lot of them for my book, and whether you agree with graphology or not, they will certainly be able to tell you that everybody has very different handwriting and that it does, in some sense, express who you are.
So what is graphology?
Handwriting analysis.
So you say this person's bold, this person's timid, based on what their handwriting is like.
I don't necessarily think you can that handwriting analysis is valid in every way, but I think that there are certain general things like that yeah. you can see in a handwriting.
Tracy, you wanted to get in on this.
Yeah, I think
conversation.
Part of this discussion about the beauty and the artistry, you know, of that kind of handwriting. My grandmother, same thing. It was beautiful handwriting. We don't see that much today for a number of reasons, some of which we've touched on. Some are just societal trends, obviously. But what we hear from our teachers is what is absolutely essential is that students improve their handwriting. We continue to hear that it hurts students, whether it's print or whether it's cursive, that when there is illegible, poorly constructed writing, that it hurts them academically down the road. And really in terms and other things, not just how they're viewed, how they're perceived, filling out a job application, submitting an essay, but also things that are a little less tangible. The confidence that a student has who might have poor handwriting, the limiting that they will choose to write less and less. They'll struggle more with the process of writing rather than the composing and the creativity that should be going on. And so, you know, I've heard more in the last few weeks from our members who have said we absolutely must do a better job of teaching students to write legibly and giving them the choice then of which script or style they choose to go in. I also think that there's an argument there, too, that we've heard from teachers about that's one reason that we do see school boards and state boards of ed saying, let's give students the opportunity to, in addition to, not instead of, to do some of that writing and composing on the computer, where they can write freely and quickly and manipulate their ideas. So neither idea needs to be done at the exclusion of the other.
And, you know, I know one of my kids had terrible handwriting, had great difficulty mastering handwriting. In fact, he never has actually mastered handwriting. And so it was so important for him to be able to keyboard really from elementary school on, or otherwise he never would have been able to write any essay. He would have been flummoxed by just the process of doing it by hand.
Yeah, and I would argue that a lot of the people, you know, as Kitty mentioned, who are sort of real activists and coming out of the fore, have very good handwriting. And those of us who never got praise for our handwriting, who really struggled, it's very hard, and it's a fine motor skill, don't feel that same nostalgia.
Yeah. Let's go to Sherry. She's calling us from Jonesboro, Arkansas. Sherry, hi. You're on the air.
Hi. I work in a retail environment where I both hire teenagers and have my main customer base being teenagers. And it never ceases to surprise me on how many of them cannot even sign their name, whether it's a credit card receipt or an application. And the names don't even have to be, you know, beautiful. They just don't even know how to write in cursive for their name, so they like print their name. And when I'm reviewing an application, I take that into consideration.
So you think you're less likely to hire someone who just really hasn't mastered handwriting at all?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I would use that exact example as a reason why she should be having all of her hiring with typing, because she's discriminating against job applicants based on a fine motor skill.
Well, Sherry, what do you think about that?
Well, fine motor skills are important, and but you know, if it's simply typing, you can't look for some of the situations like if they're taking the time to actually, well, you know, print out the application, that's fine. But when it comes to the signature spot, I want that. I want to know that you understand the basics of writing, of understanding, you know, maybe because I'm an old fogey, but, you know, once again, I'm reviewing these applications. And if children look at me with like a deer in the headlights and go, what do I do here? And I said, well, you just sign your name in cursive. And if they don't understand that, that shows me that they don't have a larger awareness of our society.
Yeah, Sherry, interesting point. Thanks so much for calling us. I'm Susan Page, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. Let's go to another caller. We'll go to Winter Park, Florida, and talk to Alexis. Alexis, hi, you're on The Diane Rehm Show.
Hey there, how you doing?
Good.
Good. I just wanted to comment on the people on your show that have talked about using a computer to write all have a background in learning how to write with pen and paper and organize their thoughts that way. And I think that if you throw a kid right into using a computer, you lose that kind of conservation of thought or purposefulness of what they're about to write, and they kind of don't have that organizational capacity. The computer is a tool, and you have to understand why you're using the tool before you can know how to use the tool correctly.
Alexis, interesting point. Kitty, what do you think?
Yes, well, that's what I was saying before. I do think that it's important. And I have to just jump in here with what I think is, I guess it sounds like a radical idea, but to me it seems to be the solution for the whole cursive versus keyboarding problem. I certainly think everybody should know how to type, do touch typing, and I'm so glad I learned it in high school too. So that's a given. But when it comes to learning handwriting, I don't think cursive should be taught, and I don't think printing should be taught. I think that everybody should learn an italic script, which is a sort of combination of printing and cursive. It can be connected up when you want to or not connected when you don't want to. It's individual for everybody. It's fast. It's legible. And I think it should be taught from kindergarten or first grade. And there are some school districts who teach italic script, and there are certainly programs for learning it. And I just think it's something that people would be able to continue to use all their lives without having it deteriorate the way, you know, Palmer method with all those little loops and scoops can deteriorate. It's simple, it's legible, it's pleasing, and so that's just my little rant on the subject
and I know
it should be taught.
In your book, Script Scribble, you show that form of writing. Tracy, what do you think?
Well, you know, as the caller mentioned, I think it's a process of we teach students to create and to compose, and it's a process. And that's why we see most students being taught how to form, you know, print letters, block letters, and then being given an option of cursive, and then being told, now let's start putting some of this on the computer. That's the normal process we see in elementary.
I would point out that a pen is a tool as well, right? And that what we're trying to get to is to close the gap between the ideas in our head and a communication to someone else. And whatever we can use to close that gap is the tool that's best for us.
Well, did typewriters, when typewriters became common, did they prompt this same kind of debate, Kitty?
Yes, I think they did. It's as I guess Anne pointed out, people are always resistant to change. And typewriters, of course, were originally used mostly in business offices where, oddly, cursive was used. Cursive is the running hand. It was devised actually in the 16th century for people to use in offices because it was so much quicker than anything else.
And at first, the cursive, for business's purposes, was seen as more formal and impersonal.
All right. We're going to take another very short break. When we come back, we'll read from some of the very interesting emails we've gotten, and we'll go back to the phone. Stay with us.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the Melville Charitable Trust, supporting solutions to prevent and end homelessness on the web at melvilletrust.org, by the Annie E. Casey Foundation, promoting lifelong family connections for children and youth on the web at aecf.org, and by the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org. This is NPR.
On the next Fresh Air, C.J. Chivers tells us what he's witnessed on the front lines in Libya, covering the fighting for the New York Times. He's been traveling with rebels through very dangerous territory, dodging bullets and bombs, trying to tell the true story of the war. Join us.
Welcome back. I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm. And we're joined from New Haven, Connecticut by Kitty Burns-Flory. She's the author of Script and Scribble, The Rise and Fall of Handwriting. And with me here in the studio, Tracy Bailey, Director of Education Policy for the Association of American Educators, and Ann Trubeck. She's Associate Professor of Rhetoric and Composition at Oberlin College in Oberlin, Ohio. We have two related emails I think are very interesting. One of them writes, I read recently of a school in Ireland which, dismayed by the quality of student writing, gave students quill pens and taught them the artistry of writing. What they found was the quality of the writing was greatly improved, as well as the legibility. We have more writing now than ever before, but much less of it is worthwhile. We need to give students a personal investment in the writing process, and that's what cursive can provide. And the second email that is somewhat related comes from Sarah, who writes us from Houston, Texas. She says, my children are fortunate to attend a Montessori school where cursive handwriting is taught at the preschool level. It encourages them to express themselves. Her handwriting practice has directly contributed to her ability to concentrate, take care with her work, and has fueled her intellectual and creative interests. So what do you all think of that?
Well, I mentioned in the beginning of the program that there are two schools of thought among many teachers. And, you know, there is a camp that feels very strongly that That whole process, that is, one of your writers called it artistry, that whole process of composing and developing, that it can be helped with cursive. I think that the majority of educators have that absolute emphasis, though, on legible handwriting, whether it's cursive or whether it's another style. That's essential. What you really want is to give students the ability to get their thoughts out, whether it's on paper or on the computer. You know, Dr. Steve Graham is a handwriting expert from Vanderbilt University. He has a quote that I think is important. He says, if young students spend less time thinking about their handwriting and more time writing, they will have longer compositions, better grammar, and better planning. And that's what we want to see. He says it is important for students to focus more on their ideas and the composition of their writing instead of how they simply form letters. And I think that's what we want as educators. Get them to write legibly, but get them to think, get them to process, get them to create, compose, and review what they've written, and then go back and edit.
All right. Let's talk to Barry. He's calling us from Cleveland, Ohio. Barry, hi. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I'm a woman, not a man, but that's okay. I think that last comment is really important. As an occupational therapist, I work with children with hand function issues all the time. And over the years, I've seen more and more children referred for handwriting issues to OTs who really were never meant to deal with that issue in second and third grade because it wasn't taught adequately enough for them to be able to write and think at the same time. So I think what isn't being handled here is the issue of the fine motor piece having to be automatic before you can think. So it's true that if you have to think about forming letters, you can't think about ideas. So whether it's cursive or printing or keyboarding, if that skill has been taught badly, or the child hasn't reached automaticity in their ability to do it, they cannot think and write at the same time or think and type at the same time.
Well, is that a function of age or of something else? What determines whether a child's ready to have that kind of integrated process?
What determines? I'm not sure what you mean by that. I think that when you teach a motor skill, it needs to get to a particular area in the brain and in your thought process where you're not having to think about it, like driving home and wondering how you got there. So when you're an initial driver, all of your thinking has to go to the motor piece of it. So you have to have enough practice at it so that you can write with your eyes closed and you're not thinking about the letters. You could write the whole cursive alphabet in 19 seconds. You haven't thought about any of it. When you have reached a point of automaticity with a motor skill, then you can do the thinking. So some kindergartens are actually where the teacher writes for the child while the child's thinking, so they don't learn to write badly and then have to fix it. That's something I see happening over and over again. The experiential learning is not a good style for teaching a motor skill.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. It's that idea of automaticity, and keyboarding gets most kids there quicker. And that's why, you know, I'm arguing that, you know, it for so many kids, and this goes back to the email about the thing in Ireland, typing is now second nature. I mean, really, it seems very second nature to somebody who's starting very young, fourth, fifth grade, with the texting that they're doing and Facebooking and emailing. It is automatic for them. And so there's such a big disjuncture now between how comfortable they are keyboarding and the fine motor skills of the handwriting and cursive that it's just getting exacerbated. And I want to just celebrate the automaticity that kids have with typing and how much more writing they're doing and how invested in writing they're doing. It's not the formal school writing assignment, but they are writing all the time and it's they're expressing themselves through writing.
Well, and to agree with the caller on this essential point, we've heard this actually from some other physical and occupational therapists, but it's absolutely true. Our teachers tell us over and over again that when we're not taking the time or given the time to teach handwriting well, you run into what I've described earlier as a confidence problem. Students, they know they don't write well. They're criticized for it. You could call it a self-esteem issue, but it's I think what Barry phrased a few minutes ago, that it's when something isn't taught well and you don't get to the point where it becomes automatic, then students hit a stumbling block. And they continue to hit that stumbling block as they're trying to compose and write, and it gets in the way of good learning.
Well, here's an email from James who writes, I see many young people, for example, cashiers in stores, who do not even know how to hold a pen or pencil. I wonder, Tracy, if that's about what you were speaking of. They weren't ever taught correctly how to hold a pen
or pencil. That's exactly it. In fact, literally on the drive into the studio this morning, I was speaking with one of our teachers from Richmond, Virginia, and she was adamant on this point. Now, she's taught second, third, and fourth grade. She was adamant saying that when students come to her in the second and third grade, and they have not even been taught in kindergarten to hold a pencil. Their grip is all wrong. They're scribbling and scrawling. That by the time they're in third grade, it's difficult to undo some of those bad habits. So emotionally, the child has suffered, and in terms of this muscle memory that we're talking about, it's difficult to unlearn something like that, and it gets in the way for years.
Let's talk to Nancy calling us from Rochester, New York. Hi, Nancy.
Hello.
Yes, hi. Go ahead.
Hi. My question is, I wonder what private schools are doing in regard to this teaching of cursive or not. And also, I just view this as dumbing down of American students. I mean, I hardly can imagine China not teaching their children how to write their characters at any time at all. But private schools, I just wonder about that, where the children of the elite go.
All right, Nancy, thanks for your call. Tracy, do you know what's happening with private schools?
Yeah, I deal mostly with public school teachers, but I can say that with private schools, there is far more variability. You know, obviously, yeah, as I said, that, you know, in our public school system, school boards are responsive to community input, at least one would hope so. And state boards have had the same way. Private schools are responsive to a paying portion of parents. And you can bet that if those parents in that elite private school are saying, this is what we want, it'll happen. It'll just happen. I don't think that there's a huge difference. There are between public schools and private schools on this issue. There's one other issue, and that is that public schools are held accountable to standardized testing, adequate yearly progress, state and federal requirements in a way that many private schools aren't. And so they have a little more latitude in their curriculum and in their time.
Yeah, interesting. Let's go to Sarah calling us from Great Falls, Virginia. Sarah, you're on the air.
Hi. My question is maybe a little bit related to the subject. What about numbers? If instead of teaching a timetable to the kids and they spend a lot of time to memorize these things. Now I see in schools that they're using a calculator. What do you feel about that?
All right. Sarah, thanks very much for your call.
I'll jump in first. I'm a former AP Physics, AP Biology, and Chemistry teacher, and it is essential that we teach calculations where a student can set up the problem. They can set that physics problem up. They can write it out. They can manipulate it. If you want to go back to things like long division, you need to be able to know what you're working with before you move on then and use a rapid tool. And I think we still do that. We still teach multiplication tables. We still teach the basics of mathematics and of scientific equations. And then later, when a student has learned that enough to be able then to apply it, then we move into an area where we say, okay, now you can use the shortcut, but not until.
Kitty, what do you think about that?
I wondered if we could just for a minute go back to the issue of elitism. When we talk about elitism in terms of maybe private schools keeping cursive and keeping decent handwriting alive and public schools not doing that, I know this is irrelevant to what we're talking about now, but I think it's important to remember that everybody does not have a computer. Everybody doesn't have access to a keyboard. Computer ownership is not universal by any means, and there are a lot of kids who are going to have to, for one reason or another, use handwriting all through their lives because they don't have anything else to write on. And I think that's something that's maybe being overlooked when we talk about how we're just going to become a nation of keyboarders.
Do you see a digital divide already happening in schools, Kitty?
I don't know much about schools, but I know just from what I read and from the research I did when I was writing Script and Scribble and just talking to people that, you know, all school districts aren't completely equipped with computers, and much less the kids, they don't have them at home necessarily. And I'm sure that that's changing. But, you know, there's a lot of poverty and there's a lot of kids who don't have access to the things that other kids have access to. And they're kind of stuck if these kids that we're talking about now who are graduating from high school without being able to write at all.
Yeah, I respectfully disagree. I think that the digital divide is something that hasn't happened to the extent that we expected it might. And I think that precisely because of the issues of class and socioeconomic status, keyboard is important. Let's remember that caller who wasn't hiring the kids who didn't have good handwriting. I think that there are these associations that we make almost, I mean, cell phones are just about ubiquitous, and that T9 texting that so many kids are very familiar with libraries, with other forms of keyboards other than a home computer, the digital divide is something that hasn't really happened, that almost all public schools assume that kids can hand in a typewritten paper and by high school, even at, you know, the poorest public high schools, and that this is an essential basic skill that we need to make sure Americans have, which is the ability to keyboard fast, because it's going to be very important for their future.
Well, I can just say from the public school perspective, I think the public schools have done a great job of avoiding what many of us were concerned about, that digital divide. Now, again, in some school districts, it still happens, but the vast majority of high schools across the country are not only allowing, but in many cases requiring students to turn in their assignments electronically. Again, we've got computers in the schools, we've got them in the library, those kinds of places. But that's just the way that the world works today.
Here's an email from Anne, who writes us from Durham, North Carolina. She writes, as a college English instructor, I have to require in-class handwritten essays because many students are not thinking for themselves while keyboarding because they are multitasking on the internet while composing. And they lift a sentence or a paragraph here and there and call it their own work. I see more and more plagiarism every year. Now, Anne, you also teach college. Do you have these concerns? Two, really. One, that people are multitasking when they're keyboarding, and also that it makes it easy to plagiarize.
Yeah, I think that we multitask even when we sit with our pen and paper as we daydream. So I don't buy into the multitasking internet downfall way of thinking. I do think we need to rethink our definitions of plagiarism and attribution. That's very important. I mean, these things are changing as well, and those are issues to deal with, but not so much to go backwards and say, okay, put away your keyboards and let's handwrite something those college students probably have no real, you know, association with, and it makes it, you know, loses the automaticity. We need to just rethink and better teach plagiarism, attribution, copyright, those issues.
You said that you think our theories about plagiarism should change. What do you mean?
Yeah, we need to rethink that idea of, you know, original authorship and copy. You know, we do so much copy and pasting, and, you know, we need to better teach students, you know, the criteria of research and citation, but we also have to rethink what we mean by sort of unintentional plagiarism, you know, understanding that often these students are not intentionally trying to cheat, but they have a different understanding of citation and attribution than we do, less, you know, over 30%.
But is the point to teach them to attribute things that they copy, or to change our ideas of what amounts to plagiarism?
Both. I mean, I think we are in a moment right now where we need to do both, but I think that our ideas of what constitutes plagiarism and original authorship will slowly shift as well.
Kitty, what do you think about that?
Well, I guess it doesn't sound that good to me. I think that original thinking is really important when you're in high school and college, and in fact all your life. And to change the concept of plagiarism means that we have to condone taking other people's words and passing them off as our own.
Yeah, it concerns me too. I think plagiarism becomes easier now, but therefore we need to be kind of stricter with insisting that things get attributed. What do you think, Tracy?
Well, I have a large family of my own. I have two of my own children in college. I have three in high school and some others. I think what I found interesting are the software programs that high schools and colleges use where you can instantly identify plagiarism. Kids need to know you will not get by with it, not a paragraph.
I'm Susan Page, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. Let's go back to the phones. Tacoma Park, Maryland. Annie's calling us. I think she's a teacher at one of the private schools that we were talking about before. Hi, Annie.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good. Yes, I teach kindergarten in a private school in Washington, D.C., and we've been having this conversation at our own school among the faculty about print and cursive writing, and we still do teach it. We teach print in the kindergarten and first grade and second grade, and then move into learning cursive in the upper grades, the K-8 school. And one of the considerations, I haven't heard all of this conversation, I don't know if it's come up, is hand size, and that being relevant at 5 or 6 when they're learning to write, that their hands are small and it's hard for them to be able to manipulate a keyboard at that time.
All right. Well, Annie, thanks very much for your call. Any comments, Tracy?
Well, I know in the public schools, they typically don't teach keyboarding until some of the other more basic skills have been established. And so I don't know whether that's been an issue. I think the way that most public schools have done this, again, beginning with print, K-1 and 2, cursive, you know, second, third, maybe fourth grade, I think it falls into and agrees with what Annie just said, is that we're teaching things at appropriate levels.
You know, we've had some impassioned emails from the defenders of teaching cursive. Fred from Ann Arbor, Michigan says, what do you do when the lights go out and you're dependent on keyboards? And Lee has posted a comment on our website saying, not learning to write because there are electronic media. Isn't that like saying, because you have a car, you don't need to learn how to walk? Well, we're going to have to leave it there. I want to thank our panel for joining us this hour. Kitty Burns-Flory, Tracy Bailey, and Andrew Beck, thanks so much for being with us on the Diane Rehm Show. I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm. She's on vacation this week. Thanks for listening.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, Monique Nazareth, Sarah Ashworth, Lisa Dunn, and Nikki Jex. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. AC Valdez answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives, transcripts, podcasts, and CD sales. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org, and we're on Facebook and Twitter. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR.